Today is December 5th, 2013, and Jack McMillan and I, Kathy Stein, have the great pleasure of sitting with Brenda Meredith, who has been a community member of Carversville for some time, and we're going to learn a lot about Carversville in this conversation. I've also had the great pleasure of being on the board for Historic Carversville Society for a year, and one of our missions is to collect oral histories as part of our way to preserve the history of our village. And so we're going to begin to discuss your memory of Carversville from when you moved here, and if you can tell us again the year that you moved here, and we can begin.
Well, I moved here, bought this house in 1966, but on the other hand, I had found Carversville by chance, because I lived in Willow Grove with my children, and we had a boat, a rowboat, and then we had got rid of that, and we got a aluminum canoe, and so we were always heading for the canoe or the river. And one time I came through Carversville, and I liked it so much that I usually made a point of coming through Carversville, coming or going, just because
so
I liked it.
Were you in the creek, coming through the creek, or on the Delaware?
And then we were heading for the canal Delaware.
Right, okay.
Sometimes we're in the canal, sometimes in the Delaware.
And at that time, you were living in Willow Grove or that area?
Yeah, in Willow Grove, mm-hmm. Township Line Road.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so then I wanted to send Diana to Shoulder School.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to live within 5 or 10 miles of the school. So I was looking for a house within 5 or 10 miles of the school. And somewhere I saw a house, and the real estate man was called Mr. Root. His office was down there in Lumberville.
Oh.
And the woman who answered the telephone was a secretarial type. She told me the price of that house, and it was too much for me, so I wasn't interested. And she said, but there is a house you might be interested in, and start to talk about this house. And she said, but don't say that I told you, because she said, I'm just a secretary here, I'm not allowed to say anything about this. And I said, no, I won't say a word. So when I saw this house, it had several of the things that I wanted, but not all of them. I wanted a house that didn't have hot air heat. But it does have hot air heat.
Oh.
I much preferred the other, the hot water in the pipes.
And, yeah.
But I was living in a fairly new house in Willow Grove, which I said was a sort of, I looked upon it as being like a chicken house.
Why is that?
I don't know. And this seemed like a very nice house. And the man who owned it said, well, if you have anything you'd like to put in here before closing, you know, you can put them in the basement. I went down to the basement and I said, oh, lovely dry basement. And he smiled an odd sort of a smile, which I remembered later when the cellar filled with flood with water.
Yes.
I realized what anybody who has an empty basement has a basement that gets wet.
Right.
Anybody who has a basement full of junk has a dry basement. And any basement that has a sump pump gets wet.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't know any of these things. Nor did I know that it was very foolish to buy a house on the banks of a stream.
Yeah.
I only know now for my last life.
That's right.
Not to live too close to the ocean or a lake or any water. But, anyway, until the flood came, I was very pleased with the house. I often have thought that I should have left after the first flood. But I didn't. We had a space of 20 years without a flood.
Yeah, so do you recall the first flood that
you had? No, I wasn't here for it. Because I would go camping in the summer. And Lucian Peebles was living in the house. And when the cellar filled with water, he sat on the top step and just looked at it, wondering what on earth he was supposed to do. He was quite young himself at the time. And he was working for a German man, builder. And he didn't go to work. Hans called, well, you know, what happened? He said, well, cellar's full of water, I don't know what to do. And Hans said, well, come to work today and tomorrow I'll help you get rid of the water. So he learned. He used to pump it out. There were windows in the basement. The water just poured in. Now the windows are all... I got rid of all the windows. Shut them up.
Yeah.
It still gets in though.
It, yes.
It just depends how big the flood is. It's not a very big flood, doesn't it? It only gets a few inches.
Mm-hmm.
Half of the basement floor under the dining room was dirt.
Mm-hmm.
With a curious hole. The curious hole was where the water used to gush up.
Oh.
And so at one point I did have somebody do that, but they had to take out a lot of dirt and put in a lot of gravel and then put something else and then finally put down concrete. And so that did stop it, but it still came in between the floor and the wall.
Mm-hmm.
And it still does, but that's a sort of seep rather than a gush.
Mm-hmm.
And then that sort of flows down to the sump pump and goes away. And that never gets very big.
That's good.
But every now and then there's a big flood and it comes in higher up.
And Brenda, do I recall that the day you moved in was the day Miller's store closed?
Hmm. No, 5 days later.
5 days later.
Yes, I thought when I saw the store there, I thought, well, that's very nice. I mean, if the snow comes, there used to be more snow than there is now. I thought, oh, this is nice, the village store, you know. Betty Miller worked out in the hours that that the shop was open, in the 24, and the amount of money she made, she was working for 10 cents an hour. And she thought it really wasn't worth it. So she stopped selling groceries and she sold, she called them antiques, bits of old this and that. I bought a bench from her, which is upstairs at the moment.
Oh.
But it's not an antique for an antique show, it's just an old bench.
Uh-huh.
And that's what all her old things were. They were just bits and bats of old things. You know?
Oh.
I don't think there's anything that anybody would put in an antique show. You know?
Now, were they still selling gas at that point?
No.
It was at,
well, the general
flood?
Store is,
uh-huh,
was, had been a garage and sold gas, I think.
Okay.
I think. At the time I came, there were two men, it was what's called a body shop.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they fixed up a car,
mm-hmm,
that had,
yes,
been in an accident or driven into something. And they had a cigarette machine. And you put your money in, but you didn't get any cigarettes, so then you told them, and then they would open it up and take the cigarettes.
Ah, they had the key.
And they had a falling out, and they had a fight, a fist fight.
Oh.
And the one took an action against the other for assault, and that one went to prison, and so that was the end of the business. And the next business, I think it was Nick Silnavage's wife.
Carol.
Carol had a store there. They ran into difficulties because they were selling coffee. And I think they had to have two sinks. So they had to put in two sinks. And then they were told that they had to have a sort of closed-in glass cold place for the milk and cream. And Nick had bought himself two bison.
Mm.
He'd always wanted have bison. So he had two buffalo in his field. And in order to pay for these changes, he had to sell the buffalo. Mm. And then when the inspector came back, he said, oh, you didn't have to bother to do that. Isn't that awful?
Oh.
And then with the bison gone.
What was the, inn a local bar, or was it a restaurant?
No. The inn had a sort of glassed-in porch.
Glassed-in?
Oh, yes. Bob
and
Queen was talking about this.
And a man called Harvey sat there. And the story I was told was that Harvey had been left money to be paid to him, you know, like an allowance, so long as he worked. Apparently Harvey wasn't given to work, and whoever leaving him the money wanted him to work. So he had this shop with nothing in it, I don't think. I went there once to see if I could buy a flashlight battery. No, he didn't have a flashlight. But he used to sit there. That was the extent of his work.
The shop was open.
It was the funniest thing. And then he went away. And he went away when he finally reached the age where he could have the money without working. And I was told he went up north because he liked to hunt. Whether he went north in Pennsylvania or all the way to Vermont or New Hampshire or Canada, I don't know. Some of the other old people who live around here would tell you all that. They would know.
Yeah.
Now, the first person who had any kind of an eatery there, my friend Isis Rubin, she had an art gallery.
Really?
It was like in the present dining room and the present bar.
Mm-hmm.
And then a painter, whose name I know perfectly well, who's now very blind. Can't think of her name. Went in with Isis at the gallery, but that didn't do any good. So Isis started a little sort of coffee shop.
Was that Suzanne Douglas?
Yeah.
Suzanne Douglas, right.
But they didn't do it for very long. So Isis started a sort of coffee shop, and she handed it over then to her daughter, Sandra.
Still at the inn?
Yes, in the dining room part.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And I really can't follow the thing very much because I always went away camping in the summer, so I never knew how things went on. But then it became a restaurant with Bobby Dager. And Bobby Dager had another restaurant years before over in New Hope. And that's when it started, and it's been a restaurant ever since. But every time anybody got going, the landlord would put the price of the rent up. And that would take away from the profits. So there wasn't any point, so they'd leave. And so somebody else would come in, and the same thing happened over and over and over again. Until this present man, Will Matthias got it, and he did it to him. But then apparently friends of Will, or friends of the restaurant, helped him in some financial way that I don't happen to know what, to buy the whole building. When I asked somebody what did it mean they helped, and they said, probably means they signed the, get a loan?
The mortgage.
Right, right.
The mortgage. They went into a partnership of some kind on the real estate.
Apparently, if you can get somebody else to
co-sign,
then if you failed, they would come.
They would stand for it.
Yeah. But it doesn't mean that if you don't fail, they don't put anything in.
Right.
So I think it was some arrangement like that. And then Will's wife, what's her name?
Denny
told me they didn't make a profit for 3 years. But then on the other hand, they lived off it. Mm-hmm. You know, they got their food off it. They didn't live in the building. I'm trying to think where they did live.
They lived where Howard Barsky is now living, at the back of the Miller store.
Oh.
That back. She always had nice flowers out there, and her little girl would, you know, tricycle around and stuff.
Before they bought the house down...
Yes, they bought the house on Fleecydale.
Right.
So that brings the restaurant kind of up to date. What about the Carversville cabinet shop? Bob Kling. Was his father still working there?
No, Bob was. Bob Kling's father died when Bobby was in high school.
Oh.
And he dropped out of school. I think he told me there were two men who had worked with his father there. Mm-hmm. I guess he learnt the business from those two men, mm-hmm. because he never employs anybody. When those two men left, which I suppose they did of old age, you know. But he did that because he then supported his family,
yeah.
his mother and his siblings. Yeah. Of course, then he's been it ever since.
Right.
And he owns the whole building, which is the shop.
Yes, the shop and the store, yeah.
Yeah. Well, same thing.
Yeah.
But the whole place was very quiet. It
was really Carversville.
Very, very quiet. No cars came through the way they drive through today. Nobody drove through. There were no signs pointing to Carversville. And if you got a map of Pennsylvania, like we used to from the gas stations, Carversville wasn't on that map.
I first biked through Carversville in 72, 73. I had trouble finding it a second time. And it was very quiet. And when it rained, all of Carversville Road flooded, particularly as you went toward...
Oh, by the chapel.
Well, that's going up Aquatong. I'm talking about going out toward Cottageville.
Oh, really?
As you went toward Cottageville, just water just rushed over the road.
Oh, yes, yes, there was a place there, just the other side of Street Road.
Yeah.
It was a dip.
Yeah.
Yeah. But there used to be a huge puddle by the graveyard, and it's taken them a long time to get rid of that.
Yeah, it's still a little bit of an issue.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I noticed that when on the radio they say that there's going to be rain for the next 24 hours and flooding, it doesn't mean the Pawnucussing is going to flood. It means the roads are going to flood.
Yeah.
It's taken me a long time to realize that that's what they're talking about. If you get heavy rain,
because
the roads...
Because the ground gets saturated and won't...
And anywhere there's a dip and the drains aren't sufficient to take it away, for a few hours the roads will be flooded. Yeah.
So, Brenda, in 66, 67, when you moved here, were there any other businesses besides the ones right around the square here?
No, what was there there? There was Betty Miller selling antiques. The garage repair shop, which then collapsed. So the only business was Bobby Kling's. It was been going before and after, and still is, to a small extent.
Right.
Now, were the bargers in the mill at this point?
The bargers were already in the mill, and the mill, they'd finished decorating the mill.
They came to around 60, I think, didn't they? 60, 61, 62?
I don't know if I don't think I ever asked them, but I don't think it could... I don't think Jason was born in the village.
No,
I saw some
wasn't.
Reference to the fact that he was, but I don't think he was.
No, he... What Lillian told me sometime in the early 80s, maybe late 70s, was that they were looking for a home studio, and they had stopped at the what is now the general store to change Jason's diapers, and they looked back and saw the boarded up kind of ruin of a mill. And that's how they came up on it. It was just perfect from Raymond's
viewpoint. Yeah, but they also had looked at the place McBride bought.
Yes. That was collapsed at the time, though, I think, wasn't it?
I don't know, but she remember how she told me that.
Yeah, that was the barn that was part of the big house there.
Yeah.
In the late 70s, I looked at that barn that Mason Brower and her husband restored, and that the McBrides then took. And the roof had collapsed, and, you know, a wall had collapsed, the beams were all down. But it was only $29,000 or $129,000, something like that.
Yeah.
But, you know, you'd have to restore the entire... And that was in the late
70s. The big house beside it was gutted at one point.
Yes, that was after it was bought and they just gutted it and started from scratch.
And it had already been built onto, and they built some more.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So really the only businesses were right here around the square at the time you were here.
Yes, but really the only one that of any account was Bobby Kling's.
Yeah.
Yeah. He was and quite well known in the area.
There was so little traffic the dogs would sleep in the
Well, the dogs would sleep
road.
On the road, yes.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh. Wow.
I remember I came back one time because Lucian was living in the house, and he had a dog. He was away by this time in Philadelphia, but I had the dog here. And I came back by car. There was a policeman here, and he'd already arrested Bill Callahan's dog. Bill Callahan lived in what is now part of Joe Santoro's house. There were three apartments there.
Right, known as the Carversville Arms.
Well, I didn't know that, but anyway, they took his dog. And where was our dog? Well, like a fool, I called it. I say like a fool because Lucia said the reason I couldn't see our dog was he'd been caught once before in his life, and he knew very well.
He knew to hide.
Yeah, he knew when a policeman came around and could hide. And where he hid, I don't know, but when I called him, he came. So I scolded him and put him in the shed, you know, sort of making a scene about it. So I saw the policeman smiling broadly. And then I called Bill Callahan to tell him that the dog had been arrested. And then the next thing, Mr. Warden, who was a big cheese on the local council, called Bill and said, I've got bad news for you, I'm terribly sorry, but your dog's been put in the pound. Bill said, well, I knew that. And he said, well, how could you know? It only just happened. He said, well, one of my neighbors called me. So he had to go and pay money to get his dog back.
And Bill Callahan was the headmaster.
Callahan
was the headmaster at Solbury School?
Yes.
And you knew him before you started?
Before I actually came to live here, yes, because I had a cousin working in New York, and there came a time when there was a sort of commercial show in London, in New York, I don't know what you call them, where people in England who had made things they wanted to sell in America. What do you call that, an industrial show?
Not an art show. Crafts, handicrafts?
No. Just commercial.
A trade show.
Right, so there was a trade show. And of course it was open from early in the morning till sometime in the evening, which was too long a period for the girls who worked there. So they roped in a lot of English girls who were working in New York at the time. It was fashionable in New York to have an English secretary because quite upper class girls in England would become secretaries. Of a type, their American equivalent did not become secretaries.
Mm-hmm.
So it was really quite chic in New York to have one of these upper-class girls as your secretary. But the American secretary started to complain about it, apparently. Went to the authorities, and they got to put a stop to it, which they did. But in the meanwhile, they were there. And they were roped in to man the stalls at the trade show at night, you know, like second job. And an English woman who lived here, who I knew by this time, called Rosemary White, she found it worth her while to take the train or the bus into New York and do that and come back down again. And she met my cousin. And this was before I was actually living in this house. It was when I was still in Willow Grove. And so through my cousin, I met Rosemary. And through Rosemary, I met Bill Callanan. And through Rosemary, I also met Ethel Wallace, a painter. And both Bill and Ethel became very good friends of mine. Yeah. And so that's how I got to know about Soulbury School.
The school. And your daughter was how old when you...
Well, that was it. She was 12, so she just finished grade school. And Ron had just finished high school and was going off to college. Martin was already out of college and married and so on. So I wanted a house with three bedrooms, because I didn't think Ron had completely left home, you know. But asked him if he minded being put in an attic, and he said no, he didn't mind, he didn't care anywhere as long as it was somewhere he could sleep. So that was good. I had visions of him saying, oh, it's all very well you bought a house, but there's no place for me in your house. The house, I only paid $16,500 for this house, which is very hard for anyone to believe today. And the house, you know who Stanley is?
Yes, Stanley Walmer up on...
Oh, right,
yes.
Well, that house...
Aquaton.
Belonged to a man whose name I can't really remember, either Bobby something. No, Earl Crooker had had it, and he bought it for $9,000. So that the price of these houses just after the war was not very much at all.
But Carversville was not then the fashionable place that it became.
No, not at all.
And
no.
I remember when this house that you're now in was on the cover of Ranulph Bye's watercolor book. That he did?
Yeah. He was commissioned to do a painting of Carversville for the Doylestown Historic Society. So he sat on my bridge and he painted my house and the Teasler's house and the Barrett's. Because he said the other houses, all these houses were rather shabby. And that's how he saw Carversville. And out along Aquaton Road, they were all tarted up, you know. All sort
of repaired.
Yes,
painted.
They're gentrified. Yeah. And so that painting, presumably, is in the Doylestown Historic Society somewhere. You see
it? I think it might be the Bucks County Historic Society, because the Doylestown
Bucks County Historic Society
wasn't organized till 1990.
Where does the County Historic Society hang out?
The Mercer Museum. Yes.
Oh.
They have one wing of that kind of Palladian wing with the columns and the art gallery where they have the paintings hung in the auditorium.
I didn't know that.
Yeah,
not
the concrete castle, but there's a brick extension, which is the...
Have you seen that picture there?
I have not. They mostly have oils on the walls, but I'm sure they have it in their
archives. No, because that picture was for sale. Pat Martin, the painter who painted that picture over there, she had a job of running the art gallery for a man over at Washington Crossing. And that photograph was the, that postcard was the things that were sent out about the exhibition of Ranulph Bye. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that, that doesn't fit, does it, with the idea that it was the Bucks County Historical Society who commissioned him. Why would they commission him and then the picture, then the picture be for sale?
I don't know.
Well, that seems to be what happened. Because Pat gave me a bunch of those postcards afterwards when the show was over.
Now, at the time you moved here in the late 60s, this really was rural. I mean, everything around here was farming, right? It's farming in some estates.
Well, yes, because since then, thousands of houses have been built.
Mm-hmm.
I remember Anne saying to me that there were going to be 20,000 houses built in the county in the next few years, something like that. The first flood we had here was when that first group of houses was built at the top of Carversville Road.
As you
come down the road, there's a turning on the left. I actually went in there last year to see what it was like. It's so long ago now, the trees are huge.
Yeah, this is on...
Yes, just before you get to a couple or 300 meters before you get to Durham Road, right?
Yes.
That with the mature shade and kind of colonial-style houses.
And a piece of the road has been made much wider.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Well, if you go in there, there's a group of houses.
Right.
And they planted lots of trees, which are now enormous. Well, when that was being built, which meant there was a lot of loose soil...
And trees had been taken down? So
I don't know if there had been any trees there, I couldn't tell you. But they said that was what caused the extra amount of water.
Just the runoff.
Was the building that mm-hmm. estate up there. I don't know. We had many more after that without any more things being built that would have caused it.
I have seen paintings of Charles Boards depicting Carversville Road as a single lane, and it looked to me like it was dirt. What is your recollection of what it was?
Well, I've seen pictures of Fleecydale when it was a dirt road.
Mm-hmm.
All I know was that Carversville Road at one time was in such terribly bad shape that nobody would use it except the people who lived on it and had to use it. And I was all in favor of it staying like that, couldn't stop anybody coming down here. But in fact, when a complaint was made, the county people, whoever, needed a certain number of signatures.
Well, they could do anything, to repair anything.
Immediately. It was really so bad. Literally, you did not use it. I mean, I never used it for a certain period of time because the potholes were so bad. Particularly, of course, at night time when you couldn't see them.
Now, when you moved here, was Mr. Ward, Charles Ward, still...
No, he's dead.
He was dead by then because I know his widow continued to live there into
yes.
the 80s.
Yeah, so she taught piano.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think Charles...
And she did cleaning work to Anna yeah. Ward. And her daughters were gone. She... I remember one time she had work, like dusting in a shop after the doors were closed in the shop, you know. I think it was a very nice shop called Japan Artisans.
Down on
New Hope.
New Hope on Ferry Street. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think that she had a job to go in there and dust there, you know. Yeah. Things like that. I don't think she was working in private houses, but... And then one time I came back from camping and I saw her and I said, oh, you look wonderful, you look 10 years younger. She said, I've retired. So that suited her very well. She had one of those rubber plants. I don't know why they're called rubber plants.
Yeah,
she had the big,
leaf. Waxy leaf,
And they kept putting it in a big pot and putting it outside and bringing it in. Finally it was in such a big pot. It never went outside. And it was just like a well, that's the house you live in. It was this huge tree in the house. I imagine they have us to get somebody with an axe to chop it down. I guess it was gone by the time you were there.
Yes, didn't see that tree.
Now, when the Bargers, heard that when Mr. Barger put up the wall that was in front of the mill, there was some ill feeling about that.
Well, yes, because one of the very nice things about American villages and towns is they don't put up walls and hedges and fences like the English do. So there's all this nice openness, you know. I was so impressed by it. Well, he'd been in Italy, and he rather liked the walls, and she'd been in Italy. I thought they'd been in Italy together, but they hadn't been in Italy together. But they both liked the idea of all these walled-in courtyards. So they built a wall, and they were made to cut it down to 8 feet. You're not allowed to make a wall higher than 8 feet here.
Ah. And did they also put in the fountain that was between the wall and the mill?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And then somebody wrote something, some vulgar thing on the wall. And I don't know if somebody tried to scrub it up, but it always used, every time it got wet, you could see the writing, and every time it got dried, it disappeared.
So were you upset when the wall went up?
The wall had gone up before I came here.
Oh, okay.
One of the reasons people disliked it was the parking lot in the village.
Ah, okay.
And when the mill worked as a mill, well, that's of course when the carts would be drawn in.
Park,
And there also used to be boxing matches there.
That's right.
Now, what do they call those? They don't call them boxing matches. What do you call a boxing match in America?
I think they're boxing matches.
Well, apparently they used to take place in front of the barn, too. So the putting up the wall was offensive doubly. One, because nobody liked walls. And secondly, because they had their parking lot taken away from them.
Was the Odd Fellows Hall still active, or was it just the polling
place? The only thing that happened there was on Tuesdays, some women met there to do quilting.
Oh, right.
On Tuesdays. Mm-hmm. I went in one time to watch, and they were very friendly and encouraged me to join them if I wished to do so, which I didn't. But they had a white quilt on a stretcher, and they were doing all the quilting by hand, white on white.
Mm-hmm. Was Carversville Christian Church still kind of a center for the community?
I don't really know.
Don't know?
There was no community whatnot like there is now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, well, there's a couple of community organizations. There weren't any. And really, it was mostly just the new people that joined it.
When you moved here, had most of the people lived here for many years, for the most part? Were they, you know, long-time residents, or was it already starting to transition?
It was already starting, yes. Because after all, the Bargers were new.
Right.
The Teaslers had moved in before I came, but... They weren't local. The man who lived in where the Barretts are now.
Yes.
he made snuff. Apparently there was some old men from some part of the world, I've forgotten where, Armenia or somewhere like that, in New York, who made snuff. And other people who tried to learn it from them said they never taught them. But this man cottoned on. They didn't write anything down. And they knew all the answers in their heads. And if you went and worked there, you could learn it the same way.
Yeah.
And he did learn it from them, and he wrote it down, but they didn't.
He called it the Atlas Blending Company.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Noel says that sometimes on rainy days, you can still smell the tobacco scent, particularly where the elevator is, you know, the hand-pulled elevator, the counterweighted elevator.
I don't know where he went.
Didn't he also write for the paper?
Yes. What was his name?
Was it Tronch?
No.
Tronk?
No.
I don't know.
Was he still there when you moved in?
Yeah, oh yeah.
Okay.
Yes, yes. Yes, I knew him. Because it was he who told me what I've told you about his learning.
And was it just snuff that he made? Or did he, do pipe tobacco or anything else, do you know?
I don't really know. I mean, I've no memory of anything except the snuff. It was pretty unusual to be as...
Yeah.
It was a nice smell, too.
So was it a storefront? I mean, did people come to buy, or were they just manufacturing and shipping?
I don't know where he sold it. No.
It sounds like he was a manufacturer, wholesaler. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just that the building looks like it could have had a store.
Well, it did. Well, it was once upon a time. It was a general store.
Oh.
Have you never seen the elevator?
I have not.
Have you seen the elevator?
Of course. Weren't you at...
I was at one...
At Noel's big
New Year's
bash?
Yes, I was pregnant.
The one where everyone was... Most people were dressed up.
Yes,
Susan and I came as hobos with the... Susan was selling apples and I had a barrel with a fire in it with a newspaper over my head, panhandling. Because I wanted people to remember what the 30s were really like in America. And then we went upstairs for the party. You remember this,
yes.
Brenda.
And at the back, there's an elevator.
And it
doesn't have a door.
It's counterweighted.
You just pull the ropes.
Pull the ropes.
Ah.
All three stories.
And it still works.
Yeah.
That's magnificent. Mm-hmm. So it was a general store.
It was a general store.
It was a general store before Miller's?
A
Miller's store?
Before Miller's store.
Oh, I would think much before.
Yeah, I would think so, too.
Yeah. I mean, it was built.
Remember,
it was built as a store.
In the 19th century, this was a very prosperous community. I think there was a blacksmith here on Brenda's property.
Yes, where my shed is.
Where your shed is, yeah.
And this, in 1902, when the schoolhouse was rolled down, I think it was a harness shop. So maybe there was a...
And across from me, there was a cobbler or something, across from where Susan and I were on the slope.
And there was a cobbler in this house.
Then it was this house. There weren't two cobblers.
There was a cobbler in this house. And there was a hat maker in the back of the Teasler's property.
Was there a dentist here also?
I never heard of
dentist?
That.
There was a dentist up in Phyllis's house.
A tooth extractor.
Yeah.
And I know there was a dentist in the ward house subsequent to the wards. So that's going.
He lived there, but he didn't have his business there.
Oh, is that right?
His business is right there at the light at Buckingham, in Buckingham at 263. And
talking about Leventhal? Yes.
Yeah, only Leventhal bought that from the man who had the sheep.
Got it.
He moved in for a couple of years, had sheep, which he didn't fence in. The first morning he got the sheep, Thor, my shepherd, and I had to take the sheep back to him.
You mean behind her house?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I met that man somewhere socially recently. And he was odd. Those mm-hmm. sheep ate. There wasn't enough grazing.
They had to restore the meadow.
Yes. When, yes.
Because they had too many sheep for the acreage and for the type of.
He had to feed, he had to get by hay for them. But he didn't own the house.
No, he rented it.
No, he didn't. Friends of his had the house.
The man who has the dentist practice there now. But he bought it.
What do you mean the dentist? The Steins live in the house.
Yeah, right. We're talking about Dr. Leventhal.
Bought it from
the man who had the sheep.
Who had the sheep.
He was also a dentist.
Yes.
But he didn't own the house. The house belonged to the other dentist.
Right.
Right. Right.
But Paul actually resided in
the house
for a little while. Yeah.
I don't know what they had the sheep for.
Just a Carversville dream for someone.
I thought they had fenced it in because there's so many posts in our yard that are embedded in concrete.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, the fence that was at the bottom of our yard there, you know, where it's kind of pie-shaped.
Yes.
That fence, nothing was concreted, and, it was kind of a tumble-down fence.
Still is, yes.
And they just simply came over and came up below our hot tub and were milling around on the slope. So Susan woke up and said, I knew we'd hear the sheep, but I didn't think they'd be so loud. And I looked out the window.
Right there.
They were right below the window. So with the dog, they just, you take one sheep and all the rest follow. So they just followed us back, and I knocked on his door and said, listen, your sheep are going to get on the road. And so I don't know what he did.
But. And they never crossed the creek to your property here? No.
Well, these three houses here, ever since I've been here, have been fortunate in that there's no fences.
Yeah.
And we more or less all stay on our own bits of property, but nobody ever makes a fuss.
Yeah, it seems very cooperative. And
you get on somebody else's property. And when my great-grandsons were here, two little boys rushing around, I asked Dave Linehan, who now owns the house next door, if he minded, and he just laughed at me. But I thought I'd better ask him before he complained,
All right, so.
And then I used to, when one of the owners of that let me grow vegetables there, not exactly where he has his vegetable patch. But part of that. And then another vegetable patch I had was below, what they call the old chicken house up there?
Yes.
And then Robin let his tenant in his house garden on my vegetable patch, which I had been cultivating and feeding, and I was furious. But it wasn't mine, and I wasn't paying for it. So I dug up the land above it, which was very hard work, because it was, it was really tough stuff in there. However, I did clear it. Turned out to be really better, which was very satisfying. That's now where the sand mound is.
Okay, yes.
For the people next door.
Right.
Oh, they had to put in an elevated sand mound, huh?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes, because
for their sewage.
Mm-hmm. When the Teaslers had it, there would be. He put in a tank up there. He put gas in the tank. But it wasn't his intention to use it for that purpose. But that's how he was able to put it in. And that was why Marna used to say to me to help myself to gas for free, and I wasn't prepared to help myself to gas for free. It didn't sound right. They wanted to get the gas out of the tank so they could start using the sewage.
For what they really wanted, yeah. Yeah.
But even so, it would get overloaded, and a sort of green smelly water would come floating down the road, and the barracks then would complain. And I don't know what he did, probably tell everybody not to flush the toilet so often or something, but...
It was the
next people, the McDonald's, who wanted to put in a drainage bed, and the only kind that they could put in was this sand mound. So now there's a sand mound, and so everything's beautiful and clean, mm-hmm. as everybody should want it to be.
Is there anything else you can think about the village from particularly your early days here, but that struck you as unusual or notable? Or?
Well, you know the electrician down the bottom of Fisidale?
The Landis, is your name, or the electrician?
Several of them. Down at the bottom of Fleecydale there was a mill on the right. It had been a
that's
brush
the Landis.
Mill. No, that's not the name.
No. But often they sometimes they'll burn.
Well, they lived.
Stuff.
They lived in the building the Knolls in.
Right. Okay.
And so they must have lived in it before the.
Before Knoll.
Yeah, but was it after the tobacco? Well, it must have been before the tobacco man.
Before the tobacco.
And they were raised there. They're all middle-aged men now. They were raised there. And their father owned the mill. And the mill was working during the last war, during the Second World War. It only stopped working after that. I mean, when the time the barges bought it, it wasn't a sort of a derelict ruin or anything.
Oh.
It was a mill that had been closed for a few years, but not for very long.
Yeah. Well, in our deed to the house, you know, up the road, six or eight houses up from you, up Carversville Road, the deed says that we have to keep the mill race clear. And, of course, there's a 110-year-old black walnut in the middle of the mill race. But, you know, no one...
Yeah.
No, I can't think of anything in particular. Do you have clues to anything else? And I don't know anything about the apartments in the inn. I think they've always been there since I've been there, even though there wasn't anything doing down at the bottom, even before.
Oh, really?
It was an income stream for whoever owned the...
Yes, and then the Bosque, who now is a dentist there, he bought that whole building.
Right.
But the man who owned that was the man who owned both that and the...
That was the Rippers. That was the Rippers. They owned both the mill and that building.
And he was the man that was always shoving the rent up on the people who had...
Yeah.
Was the Carversville Inn named that when you moved here, or did it have no name? When did that name come?
Carversville Inn?
Yeah.
Well, that just describes what it is, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I think Bobby's grandfather owned it at one time.
The inn?
Yeah. If I remember correctly.
Speaks of some of that.
And the post office used to be on that little house that I always say, the little house on the bridge.
Right here, just before the bridge, right.
Yes.
In that...
Half of it.
Somebody lived in it, and just one bit of a room.
Oh. Yes.
Was
really small.
Like those two doors there?
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The left-hand door was the...
Yeah, I mean, that was up into the 80s because that was still the post office when Susan and I moved here in 84. And for a couple of years...
Yeah, I think we needed
it. And then the woman who owned it didn't... She wanted that space for herself, so she didn't renew their lease. And then the post office, there wasn't going to be any post office.
And there was a protest.
We all thought the post office would move into the shop. When it became apparent it was not going to move into the shop, five people, some of them had different kinds of influence and certain kinds of knowledge, were able to make a public protest.
And brought in the press, the TV trucks.
Yeah, and then it got an article written in the Philadelphia paper.
And we went on the evening news.
So various things were done, and it worked.
Yeah.
Well, surprisingly.
The power of a vociferous minority.
And the post office never shut for one day through all that. Which is really rather remarkable, because there was all this carpentry work going on in the store. And at the same time, they had to protect all their post office pennies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the man in the post office had a beard.
Barney. His name was
Barney.
Oh,
mm-hmm.
Barney.
And somebody painted a picture of him in the manner of Van Gogh's picture.
Mm-hmm.
And I showed him a reproduction of the Van Gogh picture. Nobody else had shown it. He hadn't known that's what it was.
Oh, that's good.
He enjoyed it very much. And when he left, he took the picture with him. And it made him smile. Very, very few things made him smile.
That's the truth.
The other thing about Barney, he was a real Kennedy assassination aficionado.
Oh, was he?
I don't know if he was conspiracy theorist, but he was certainly very interested, you know, very well read and knowledgeable about all the aspects of the assassination.
It interests me that that whole subject's come up again, because I never believed that the story... There was one part of the story that has never been remotely cleared up, is why Ruby was carefully allowed to shoot.
Yes. Well, there's a lot we won't ever know, probably. I mean, the archives are closed for 75 years, so there's another 25 years to go.
Right.
And, you know...
But there's actually a picture, a photograph, a film that I've seen. What was the man's name who shot?
Zapruder.
What?
Zapruder.
No, the name of the man who shot Kennedy.
Oswald.
It's inside a building, there's policemen down at the bottom of a slope, and in the middle of them is Ruby. At the top of the slope, which is like a doorway to the daylight, Oswald crosses over by himself. Here's this assassinator. There's nobody holding him, even.
Yeah.
He crosses across that space, and while he's crossing it, somebody shoots him. Now, whether that somebody was Ruby or not is another matter, because it was a sharp shooter. It was somebody who could shoot once and kill him.
You're talking about killing Oswald.
Yep.
Well, I haven't seen that film, but the film...
I mean, the fact that they wanted him dead and that they arranged it, so just... I mean, it just leaves you speechless. It's just an absolutely amazing thing to have happened. Never the slightest explanation. Nothing happened to Ruby. Assassinated most important prisoner in the United States. Walking in... I would like to say he didn't even have on handcuffs, but I can't say that because I don't remember.
Yeah.
And that somebody is there taking a photograph of it all.
Mm. all the news media were there. I mean, there were all kinds of bystanders around.
Extraordinary.
There was no security. Brenda, do you remember anything in particular about the buildings that were here now, that were here then?
Well, aren't they all the same?
Well, pretty much. Yeah.
I mean, my shed was taken down, and Lucian built these.
The two Anns.
My shed and one and Anns, and the unusual roof that he put on it, which was an Italian invention, was suitable for Anns. That's to say, it was a very economical kind of a roof. It wasn't, he explained to me, any advantage putting it on my small shed, just that he fancied to do it. But I looked after mine. It's been retarred, had new felt put on it, and it's been repaired in a couple of places where the water had rotted the wood. But Anne never looked after hers. And then when it belonged to Dave Linehan, and he wanted to pull it down and build another, and they wouldn't let him. They said he could repair it.
Yeah.
So he turned his man on to repairing it, who just pulled it down because it was rotten. And at that point, some inspector came by and said, well, now you've done it.
Yeah.
So that was the end of that.
Sad.
He was told he could build a garage if it was sort of propped up in the air, which wasn't much use.
No.
To have a garage would be... So he has no garage.
Yeah. That's right. What you mentioned early in the conversation about snow. And are there any stories that you can remember of, I certainly recall being here for the 32 inches in the 90s.
Well, the snow clearance wasn't as good as it is now.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely not as good. I mean, it's really just amazing the difference. I think it was like half a century later. Mm. I mean, I remember the Cold Spring Creamery Road being like the bottom of a riverbed, trying to bump your way over the frozen snow. It's
yes.
So bad.
Yes.
So bad.
Yes.
And then the puddles, as the snow would melt. Yeah, that was bad here, because unlike in Canada, when it freezes, it stays frozen. See, it usually thaws here in the day.
Mm-hmm.
And so the snow and the ice would all be wet. And then the sun would go down and would all be frozen. And it would be very dangerous. Mm. And there would be accidents between here and Doylestown because of that. And some of the drains were not kept open and so on. So the whole business of snow removal has been greatly improved. Another thing is that nowadays, as well as the commuter cars rushing through the village all the time, there's all these pickup trucks and their trailers rattling around with their
the
noisy.
Lawn maintenance people.
They were, everybody here apparently cut their own grass. And nowadays, I don't know if anybody cuts their grass except my neighbors. My two neighbors, you cut.
No, Robert
is, cuts it.
Religious
well,
about
Doug
it. Doug
Shaw
yes.
cuts it too.
Yes, yes.
But other people pay to have it. So that's another sign, isn't it, of the more money that's moved in.
Mm.
I don't really know what happened along Akrotong Road. I knew Stanley, mm-hmm. and the man who came to live in that house, but who lived in that house before him.
And how about the Overpecks? Did you know them? I don't know their history.
I've known three people who lived in that house.
Oh.
The one here near the intersection.
Stanley's house.
Oh, okay.
Was that an Overpeck house?
No.
Oh.
But, there was a man called Earl Crook who lived there, and he sometimes would teach at Solbury School, and his wife they had a theatrical background. think they moved there after the war. He told me that it was common that the houses here in Carversville didn't have indoor toilets, and that they were sort of modernized after the Second World War.
Mm-hmm.
So that surprised me.
No, our house, that's definitely the case.
But they were all, I think they were all modernized in that sense by the time I came here.
Okay.
Now the Olpecks had that curious business of owning that house that nobody's ever lived in, the old house.
The stone one that
yes,
set
right
sideways,
right.
Yeah.
And then the house that they lived in themselves is now just sits
there.
So
they actually did live in the one across the street?
Yes.
Yeah, the little square one,
yeah.
Really nice.
With all
yeah.
the
nicely proportioned square stone house.
Growth of weeds in the front yard.
But now they have the farm up almost to 263, right?
Yes.
Yeah, they lived there for 20 years.
And why they don't sell these properties? It's curious.
Yeah.
Is she still alive?
Last I heard, she is. She's just in a nursing home.
Oh, I see. She's not well.
Not well.
Clarence was here at the, not this Carversville annual meeting, but 2012. He was at the meeting.
Last year,
yes. Mm-hmm. I don't know how long he stayed. I said hello to him. But I don't know
if anybody's ever asked them why they don't sell their properties.
Do they have children?
And then there's another house up there that's at right angles to the road.
Mm-hmm.
And a man apparently hung himself in that house. I mean, while I was here, I didn't know the man, but that's what I was told. But I don't remember anything else. I never had anything to do with the church.
Okay.
So I don't think about what went on there at all. And after all, it still goes on. I think it's quite active. The new minister came the day the steeple burnt.
Yeah.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Or the day before, something
yes.
like
wow.
that.
Right.
Just as the one of the owners of the house beside me, they had settlement in Doylestown, came out to look at their nice new house, found it was a flood.
Yes. You're talking about Dave Linehan?
And there was a door. The far side of the parking lot, which Dave Lenham very sensibly got rid of. There's a
yes.
wall there now, no
yes.
door at all,
mm-hmm.
because the flood just came straight in, you know. And
that was the door to Anne's kitchen, right? That's
yeah.
the one everyone went in and
that's
out of.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes. It's now
yeah.
Dave's living room.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And he closed the outside entrance to the basement. For all the good it did for him, his basement still fills with water.
Oh, it does.
Yeah. The pump, some pump pumps it out. But he doesn't do anything, he hasn't done anything about it. I told him that I had an exhaust fan in my basement.
Mm-hmm.
And he put one in, I believe. But I also believe that it doesn't work anymore. I never asked him any questions about it.
So Brenda, when did you start walking your daily walks? Was this something after you retired, or was it something you did on a regular basis?
I guess I did all my life, except when I had small children to look after and couldn't.
Yeah.
But
now, was that
if people who live in the country in England and Ireland are inclined to walk daily, it's a sort of national characteristic pretty much, there's nothing. I don't say everybody does it, but probably somebody in every house does it, you know. And so it was a pretty normal thing for me to do. But then you see, when I went camping, and that was in order to walk all day long, mm-hmm. walk in the mountains, you know. I wouldn't do very well if I had to live in a cabin. I mean, cabin fever, I would get very badly. Mm. Yes.
Does anything else come to mind about the village or your time here?
Not at the moment, no.
Well, thank you for your time and your memories.
Yeah.
The children made a nasty mess during All Saints Day.
What's Halloween.
It called? Mm. Yeah. They'd make the place ugly with lavatory paper.
Paper the trees, yeah. And hedges. Yeah.
They used to, the bridge the other side of Carversville, that was a place, I don't mean the Iron Bridge,
okay.
I mean the immediate bridge.
Okay.
The one right by the end there.
Just beyond the end,
yeah.
Yeah, that was very much a meeting place for teenagers. Well, there don't seem to be teenagers much in the village now. They come down this road from somewhere.
I've seen them, the skateboarders. Well,
yes, there was a bunch of them, six boys on skateboards, yes.
Yeah.
But I mean, you will see teenagers in holiday times coming down here. But right here in the village, I don't think there are any. There are some little ones.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Now, do you recall when Nick Zelenevich and Carol had the general store?
Mm-hmm.
Did he play or have baseball games in the field beyond?
No, they never had them since I came here. And when I asked, you know,
what do you call the thing? Diamond.
Diamond, and there's the thing with the net,
behind,
you know,
it, yeah.
The backstop.
Well, we were told that the man who owned it had been told that he ought not to allow it because somebody might sue him if anything happened to anybody.
Yeah, liability issues.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So then he was, I suppose the people who wanted to play baseball suggested he pay half the insurance and they'd pay the other half, and he didn't go for that either. So that was a pity. And the woman who used to live, was in the house beside me when I came here, old Mrs. Foster. Well, she was a Miss Foster, really. She was in the first graduated class of, you know, where they learned to be teachers, teachers training college, somewhere west of Philadelphia. And because at an earlier stage in America, teachers for the public schools were not trained.
Oh.
Anybody, you could be a teacher, anybody could be a teacher. People who are out of work often became teachers for a while.
Okay.
Yeah, it was a way of getting a living. I mean, some sort of an engineer or something, or a bus driver, as long as he could read and write and do his sums. As long as he knew more than the kids knew, you know. And then gradually they started having teachers' training colleges.
Okay, and so she...
Which were called normal schools.
That's right.
I didn't know that.
And she was in the first graduating class. And she had had a child out of wedlock, which was presumably why she never got married. And she lived in that house with her daughter and her daughter's husband. And her daughter didn't have any children. And the daughter and her husband both worked. And so Mrs. Foster was there by herself. And she would come over and call on me at about the time I was cooking dinner, which I enjoyed. And then her daughter scolded her and said she was just being a nuisance. So she asked me about that, and I said, no, I really enjoy. She always tactfully got up and left, you know, before any kids came home or anything, you know, before we sat down to dinner. But she had taught school up there at Wismar somewhere.
Oh.
In this schoolhouse?
Yeah, no, and that was called Normal. I don't remember the whole title of it. But
no, not the one up the steps. Not the one in the field up here. Somewhere up Wismar. She used to walk up.
But I think that the little studio building.
That schoolhouse on our property.
But she didn't teach there.
But that used to be up Wismar. They moved it down here.
Yeah, in 1902, so that makes sense.
Then. Anyway, she always talked of walking up the hill every day. And she said, there are a whole lot of Polish children here. Polish
really?
People bought farms here sight unseen, because they would have other Polish friends here.
Oh.
And she said, I taught all those kids, I taught them English. I only had one family who were English speaking in the school. All the rest were Polish. So then she felt that they didn't really feel they were Americans. And she felt she must do something about that. So she went to the editor of the paper in Doylestown, and she told them about herself and about these children and these parents. And she said, I would like to write an article once a week. He said, I would like to write an article every day. So she started writing an article, because she would find out about the families from the children, you know, who'd say that the pig had had so many piglets or hattons or whatever, you know. And she wanted these people to feel that they were part of America, and that if they were written up all the time in the newspaper, I often wonder if they were annoyed about it or pleased.
Yeah, what the parents really thought.
Like, well, Tommy, what did you say to the teacher?
The first Carversville day I went to, I guess, was 85.
Wow, okay.
Because we had moved here in the fall of 84. And, you know, it was a big thing. I came in early and helped set up and stuff. And during the festivities, a very elderly farmer type guy came down, very, you know, curmudgeonly, maybe in his 80s, maybe older, I don't know, came down, and he said, I haven't seen this many people in Carversville since the First World War, you know, since the call-ups. So that would have made him in his 80s, right? And when we used to walk, Brenda, you and Susan and I, along
Tollgate Road
and Tollgate, some of those farms on the left had Polish names on the mailboxes.
Yeah, those there are three houses up there, and they belong to siblings. Now I know which was the large house, and this one son got that, and he had quite a lot done to it before he moved into it. And one of his brothers was sort of diagonal across the way from him. The house where I don't know if you ever noticed, but they've grown so much since I've been here. He had planted his Christmas trees. There's a row of his Christmas trees.
Oh, every year he'd get a live Christmas tree.
Yeah, and they've been big now.
Mm-hmm.
Just before you get to Short Road.
Okay.
And it's the house that's right opposite the entrance to Short Road.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Okay.
That was the father's house. I did know the name, but I've forgotten it. And then you go along, and Short Road makes a left.
Right.
And there's a house on the right. And then that house was another one of the brothers. But mostly the children of these Polish farmers did not take up farming.
Oh.
They moved into Philadelphia. And when Mrs. Foster retired or reached some great age, I don't know which, they got together and they made a sort of shield and put silver dollars all around it and so on as a present. But she wouldn't use those silver dollars. She kept them there.
That's
And she was very, aware of, she knew about the wildflowers. She knew all about the wildflowers and the fact that they were protected. They are protected. You're not allowed to dig up the wildflowers and put them in your garden. I don't think too many people know that.
No, I don't.
Well, there was a particular bunch of bloodroot that's on. There's quite a lot of bloodroot on Sugan Road, on the banks of Sugan Road. But there's only one bunch of bloodroot around here. And now it's all covered up with a broken tree, and I don't suppose I'll ever see it again. And there was a bunch like that, and then another little bunch there. And a couple of years ago, that little bunch went, and I'm sure somebody dug it up and stole it.
Oh.
It's a very pretty white flower.
Bloodroot, I'll look that
it's
up.
It's called bloodroot because apparently the root
it's
has
red
sap in it. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Wow, that was fascinating.
Mrs. Foster.
Anything else come to mind? The Polish students at the schoolhouse that's now on Kathy and Robert's property. That's interesting.
Yeah.
I never knew that.
I'm not sure.
Somebody bought the schoolhouse, did they, and moved it there?
Yes, but they did that in 1902. They moved it down from the parsonage with mules.
So it must have been a different schoolhouse.
Yes, because we're talking.
She always talked of walking up to Wismar.
Yeah. I think there
was. So I suppose it was the crossroad. I assumed it was the crossroad where Ferry was.
They were near Ferry? Yeah.
But I don't know, but that's what I always assumed. Because she wasn't going to walk any further than that.
That's a good long walk.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. There's a little bridge over the creek before you get there.
Yes.
Well, that's a mile from my yard to that bridge.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
And it's all uphill.
Yeah, I'll wake you up.
Unless you're coming back.
Yes.
In which case it's all downhill.
Yeah.
And all those trees you see have all been planted since I came here. Mm. Yeah, a lot of houses in the area have been built since I came here, but there's not much changes in the village.
Did you ever go to any of the parties that Mr. Green gave, where the pagoda is and all that?
Yeah, he used to have music. Used to hire musicians and they'd play in that wonderful Chinese
pagoda,
or whatever it is. And I remember some man complaining how boring it all was, and I was felt so annoyed with him. And I said, well, why do you go if it's so boring, you know? I said, just so that you can talk about it, you know. He was the fashion editor, Mr. Green, for something well-known.
Either Playboy or Esquire, I forget
which. Yes, that's right.
Yeah.
But apparently he had a financial disaster, which is why he left here. I don't know if he went bankrupt or not, but...
Any idea how long he was here?
No. And I don't know...
He was here until the early 80s, I think.
Yeah, but when did he come?
Yeah, I mean, he may have still been here when Susan and I moved here.
And did he build the bandstand?
That little Chinese gazebo was his ha-ha, his garden ha-ha.
He built it. And I'm glad to say somebody has painted it.
Oh, good.
It got very shabby.
Oh, you mean painted the actual structure?
Yeah.
I thought you meant did a painting.
No, it got very shabby. And then somebody, I'm glad
to
say.
The reason I know he was still here, or at least had just recently departed, is because shortly after Susan and I moved here, there was a big auction. I think it was auctioned off. And you know, some very grand cars, and I think at least one helicopter came in for the auction.
Whoa.
So.
That could have been while I was away camping.
Might have been, Brenda.
It was
good weather. You know, it was
balmy weather. I don't remember
if it was early fall, late spring, summer, whatever it was. But they would have done it at the best time to show it, that's for sure.
I didn't even know it was auctioned.
Yeah.
Now, Mrs. Foster complained about Tollgate Road being called Tollgate Road.
Why?
first of all, it wasn't a toll road, and it had the name of somebody who had a farm up there, which was a fairly normal way of naming a road. You know, there's a big farm, and that's what it had been called.
After the farm?
After the name of somebody who lived up there. Like Carversville is named for Mr. Carver. Mm-hmm. And Doylestown for Mr. Doyle, presumably.
The Doyle brothers, yes.
Now, was Lumberville, that wasn't Lumberville originally?
Well, it would seem reasonable with the lumber business.
Yes.
And the Tinsmans were not the original owners of it.
Oh,
no. I thought they were, because they were the three generations, but they weren't. No, they had bought it.
Hmm. Well, and Carversville wasn't always Carversville
right.
either.
Right.
And Lumberville, after Carversville became an historical whatnot, some years later, Lumberville people started wondering if they'd make themselves into one, but I think realizing what a stranglehold it has on anybody.
Yeah, they didn't.
They decided not to.
I mean, they could never have done to the little cottage that I'm blanking on. Who's the woman, post-impressionist, who painted in kind of oranges and yellows and you know who I mean.
Yeah.
She had a very charming little cottage.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, sure. Okay.
There on the opposite side of the road from the river. And it was just charming. And someone, you know, expanded it to four or five times. And it lost that just kind of simple grace that it had. We'll think of her name as we're driving home. You know who
but it really has been a sort of stupid nuisance in this village. You know, somebody needed new siding on their house, so they put aluminum siding up, and they were made to take it down. Well, I mean, nobody would have known that aluminum siding is made to look like clapboard.
Yeah.
And to all intents and purposes, anybody bothered to notice would go on
so
looking like clapboard. But they were made to take it off. Well, that woman could ill afford it, I believe. Somebody else wanted to put in window boxes. Now, we all know the window boxes never last longer than the person who puts them in, because it's not like some countries like Switzerland and Austria where it's a national thing to have window boxes. No, but this person wasn't allowed to have window boxes.
Now, you're
and the fact that they even try to control the way people paint their houses. I mean, it's not that anybody's going to do anything very extraordinary, but if they did, it would be kind of entertaining anyway.
I've always admired the grape-colored house in Lumberville.
Lovely.
I don't think it's grape anymore, but it was for several decades.
You mean a purple house?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't remember it.
So you're saying that Harb has no jurisdiction in Lumberville?
No, none at all.
I don't think so. No, because I just walked with a friend a few weeks ago. I don't think they have a National Historic District.
No.
And that's the reason all the houses that I used to walk the dog on in the 80s and 90s, I wouldn't recognize them now. They're vast, palatial, probably New York, you know, weekender in summer places.
Yes.
I mean, they're magnificent, but they're not what Lumberville was to me.
But there's nothing down there in bad taste.
No, but there's a certain gigantism to it, you know.
Well, yeah, but I mean, once upon a time it would have been log cabins.
Right. Yeah.
By the time the house next door was built, stone house, everybody else, except for the mill, was living in log houses.
Mm-hmm. Frame, yeah.
I don't know who's responsible.
Now,
for.
Were you aware of, wasn't there either a freedman or a African-American who lived on Fleecydale Road, kind of, not in a cave, but in a sod house or something? Do you remember anything about that?
No, I don't think about that.
Okay. I thought maybe you'd have heard people talk about
no.
it.
No. No.
Well, Brenda, we thank you for your time.
Yes. That's
fine. And any changes that take place, they've all taken place very slowly.
Mm-hmm. You know, and part of that is because of the restrictions, I think. You know.
No, I was thinking of all those motor cars.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, they're not being... I mean, at present we have a shop and a restaurant. And these huge trucks come in, enormous trucks.
Yes.
Well, there was no reason for any trucks to come in at all. You know?
Right.
The post office van, but it must have been the biggest one that came in.
Now, has Stella been living in that corner house as long
yes.
as you've been here?
Yes.
Okay.
Have you talked to her?
Michelle Stolpen has.
Have you heard?
I have not heard the recording. I don't know if it's finished.
Or is somebody going to type it?
I don't know. Michelle hasn't reported back.
And who's Michelle?
She's also on the board, and she lives in... She has a young boy, so he's one of the young... group on
skateboards.
No,
okay.
he's only I think eight okay. or nine, and he plays with the leisure grandchildren, and so she lives in the house next to the Overpex
old house
on
the little simple one that's
yes.
next.
Did you
the
know
field.
There's a man of a there's a, over 100 living in a house next
Tony?
Door to the Hansons?
Yes, I've heard this. And Michelle also is supposed to interview him because she, being on
How
that
long
road,
has she been here?
She's only been here a few years.
You say she's been here only a few years?
Yeah.
But he's lived here all his life?
I think.
Yes, he used to live in the Hansons' house.
So they're quite close, the Hansons.
The next
I
door.
I guess Charles Hargens. We weren't doing interviews at the time Charles Hargens was still living, were we?
Yeah, I was invited to his 100th
so.
Birthday.
Because his 100th birthday.
But yeah. Unfortunately, I couldn't go. I mean, I had some prior engagement that I had to... To do.
Yeah, well, I remember him coming down in his 100th year, I guess, and signing some of the
yes,
prints that
yes.
he had given us to sell.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
Now, was it in 85 that they kind of dedicated Carversville Day as Charles Hargens Day? I was talking...
It was somewhere in the mid-80s, because I remember it was around that time. He was still living.
Yeah.
And he did come down, and there was
like
a little...
horse and buggy, and then he went out in a limousine, and it was a big...
I don't remember the details.
Yeah.
What happened recently about the fence that the woman at the Hobby Horse Farm wanted to put up to keep out the deer?
Yeah, I think it passed.
You mean on Sawmill?
Yes. Mm-hmm. I think it passed. There were some modifications made. But I think she was...
Has the fence been put up?
Oh, that I don't know. I don't know.
Mm. But that's not inside the district, is it?
Yes.
Certainly
Hobby
within...
Hobby Horse, is it?
Yeah.
Harb had lots
it's in
of
Carversville, yeah.
Now, is it the case that the people who own Hobby Horse also purchased the corner property?
Somebody told me that that was the
Hero's case. Property, the old horse farm.
Is that what that is? I don't know.
Well, Hero, the Japanese heir, the Seiko fortune?
Okay, yes. They then bought the property on the corner.
One that had been through so many
yes.
owners and alterations.
And now it's just, I guess, vacant.
Wow.
As part of their property.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Well, there's some other house I saw recently that had only been bought a few years ago. Oh, yes. Beverly Jones' daughter and husband had a house on Sugan Road, where the road twists. Our friend Judy is on actually on the twisty corner.
Oh, yeah, Judy's turn. Yes.
Judy's turn, yeah.
But then the next house belonged to... I'm trying to say her name. I always have to go through Sweets, Candy, Candace.
Candace
Phillips.
Yes, yes.
And they bought it a few years and it's already up for sale.
Well, they've been living on... Meeting House Road.
Yeah, they've got a lovely place on Meeting House Road.
Yes.
But they sold their old house.
And that, you mean they sold it and now it's being sold again?
Yes.
I never realized they sold it.
They sold it and it's up for sale again.
Wow. That is fast.
Those places on Meeting House Road are magnificent. I've never seen places like that in this area.
It was beautiful, the property they bought.
Gorgeous.
It is. The
like
barn,
a film set.
I mean, they've been renovating it so beautifully.
Yeah.
Well, thank you.
Okay.
Thanks,
Brenda. Yeah.